here we are in 2019 and we've been able, you know, through my nonprofit, been able to build a brand new building in this floating community called Makoko.
That is Bolanley Williams-Ali talking about the school her foundation built a couple of years ago in Nigeria. And yes, I said that right. Her foundation. She goes by Bola, and I'm amazed at what she has accomplished in her young life so far. Bola is the chief financial officer at the architectural firm Mancini Duffy, where she's also a part owner, and she's joining us to talk about her award-winning book, Build Boldly. I've listened to this interview twice, and I'm telling you, this discussion, it's truly special. Our chat with Bolanley Williams-Ali here on CFO Bookshelf is coming up next. I have to give Bolanley Williams-Ali a 10 out of 10 score on her path to becoming a CFO at Mancini Duffy, which she explains in her book, Build Boldly. And by the way, I recommend it. It's a 5-star book. And if you are a CEO looking for your first CFO, this is a good read on how to make that happen and also what not to do in the process. So my first question for Bola was getting to the C-suite with a math background. Your path to CFO was not maybe traditional. How did that play out, which is in the book?
Yes. I am like the most, my path to CFO was like the most non-traditional path that you could ever think of, right? One, in college, I did not study accounting or anything finance related. In fact, I actually ran away from that because that was my mom's path, my mother's path growing up. She was a controller. She did accounting and all of that. So I was adamant on not studying that in school. However, being, you know, starting to look for a job just as soon as I was graduating college, I ended up finding a junior project accountant role in the architectural industry at my very first company called HLW International. I was an international student, and so I needed to find a company so I could get work experience and also be sponsored to stay in America, having moved here at age 17 for college. So I ended up securing the position, but securing the position really speaking to my math degree. That is essentially what set me apart in that interview. In fact, the person who was interviewing me happened to study math in school. So it became more of an interview on character, not necessarily, you know, like being like this fully prepared person for the position. However, I was able to communicate very well how my math degree could provide value to this role that I was applying for. And so that essentially began my 14 plus year journey, now making my way up to CFO. So what happened, you know, in that first junior project accountant role was that I worked very closely with the, you know, senior project accountants. I really spent a lot of time learning and understanding the industry of what exactly is even project accounting, right? What does that mean? And how can I grow in this position that I found myself in? And I was fortunate enough to work very closely with the CFO, then CFO at HLW during the financial crisis. So a lot of things, a lot of my foundation came from just really hands-on learning, right? People who were willing to invest in me. And so I started making my way up the ranks. I dropped the junior and became project accountant. And then my next position, I moved to senior project accountant, right? So then I was managing, working with project managers that did projects across Asia, big projects in the States. I really got exposure to how larger firms, my next firm was SOM, large firms really did project accounting. And the reason why I switched from my first company to the next was because I said, I don't have the college experience, but because I'm getting hands-on learning, I would love to see how another architectural firm did their own finance and accounting. And so then this leads me now to Mancini, my current position and company. And I remember getting a phone call and somebody from like 10 years ago when I was junior project accountant, who called me asked if I was interested in coming to run a finance department at a company. I was, you know, as on paper, you could have said I wasn't ready, right? That was almost like a double promotion. Or the next trajectory for me would have been like an assistant controller, right? However, I took the interview. With our current president, Christian, I shared all my concerns. I was like, listen, I can do project accounting in my sleep. You know, I've seen things from a project level, but now you're asking me to take on firm level. How are we going to set me up for success to make sure that I can really step into this controller position that I will be taking on? And one of the things that I am very grateful for is the fact that he had a consultant work with me, right? And so that's how you really set up people who you know have the characteristics, who have the experience, who are just about ready to jump.
Finally, He had a consultant work with you.
That's how
committed he was.
Yes, that is how committed he was, or that's how much he really wanted me to come on. And I will say that Christian and I worked at the first company together, but not close enough, right? So we didn't work closely together. But again, there were probably characteristics in me or like my work ethic or, you know, like how I interacted with him, with people, how I was very keen on building relationships. All of those things are, you know, not exactly taught, right? The work part you can learn, but like the characteristics part that's within somebody, those are developed over time. So whatever they saw in me 10 years ago, they probably just imagined that it must have grown, you know, 10 years into my career. And so I spent my first year as controller, really much, you know, pretty much learning everything about the company, top down, you know, working closely with the consultant, making sure that I understood the history of this, you know, 100 plus year old firm. And then also like getting to know my teammates, right? Getting to understand the people who were working on the team, what they had been exposed to, you know, what they were doing as project accountants here, really relying on learning a lot that first year. And, but I was always operating as in a CFO capacity. And what I mean by that is I was truly a strategic partner to the president and the CEO. I was thinking long-term vision, right? It's not just about crunching numbers, but how are you helping from a financial perspective, bring the firm forward into the larger vision that the company has. And so after a year, he said, you know, enough of the controller title. Let's give you the appropriate title, which you have already been working, you know, in that capacity. And so I became CFO. So that is like the real abridged version of how I worked, essentially worked my way up. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity, you know, because if I never got that phone call, I probably still might, well, maybe, maybe not, but I probably still would have stayed in that senior project accountant role. And also if I wasn't encouraged to take that leap, you know, when I look to my left, to my right and other architectural firms, a lot of people who are CFOs or controllers have many, many more years of experience than I had at 10. So I say there was like an exponential growth for me that I was able to, you know, attain this in 12 years in starting out my career.
Would you tell that president at Mancini that I really, really like him?
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
His interviewing, which you mentioned, he nailed it. I mean, yes. He got it right during that conversation. One other thing, you are also at Mancini a part owner.
Yes.
Isn't that cool?
So cool. And I think one of, you know, one of my proudest achievements also, especially thinking about my background, right? So here I am I became part owner in 2019. So I was 34 years old. 34 years old, young black woman.
Young, by the way.
Yes, young black woman from Nigeria. You know, so an immigrant here who was able to find opportunities, work her way up, but now become part owner of this historical company, right? 100 plus year old legacy. And now I get to be part of, you know, myself and my partners get to build our own legacy. To me, that's so special, right? And so I'm grateful for the opportunity. I'm excited. And aside, you know, just being part owner, I truly believe in what we're doing here. I truly believe in how we're using technology really to push the profession. how we're using it to change the way in which we deliver projects, right? So it's very exciting to be a part of.
By the way, you mentioned her briefly, but one of the heroes in the book, your mom.
Yes.
And she is a hero, and I appreciate you for getting her in the book.
Yeah, so I think I say this in a book, or, you know, in my acknowledgments, but my mom really was the blueprint for me in terms of how she modeled the value of relationships, how she stayed curious, how she evolved. So my mom was a single mom. I'm her only child. And so she really worked hard to make sure that I was afforded the things, you know, education or even just taking care of me, right? So she made sure that I attended schools that, opened or exposed my mind to great thinking. She was very insistent on me, coming to college in the States. My mom is a Rutgers alum. So she went to Rutgers University in New Jersey. So because of the exposure she had, she wanted even better for me. And so she plays a very critical key role, even though she might not have said it with words, but her actions were greatly impressed upon me in terms of how I now also maintain or strive to be very intentional in the types of relationships I have with people and showing people respect, no matter your level. I think, you know, like there are various ways in which I've seen it show up, and people just appreciate when you show you're respectful to them, when you're kind to them, when you honor them, regardless of their position, right? Different paths for different people, but it doesn't make them less of a person because I have this fancy title and they don't, right? And so I think a lot of that comes from me seeing how my mom treated people.
Let's hit some of the big ideas in the book. You use the BOLD framework. Now, you didn't just come up with, I need to think of a framework. You've lived out this very interesting life. This trajectory has been, I'm not going to say improbable, but it's been fascinating. So as you have looked back, it's like, okay, I've got the B, the O, the L, the D, maybe not in that order, but I love that framework. Can you explain it?
Yes. So, I mean, that framework was, like you said, really birthed from me reflecting back on, one, the themes that have shown up at different points in not just my professional life, but my personal life. And excuse me. And also, like, what were the major takeaways? You know, like, what exactly did I do that helped me, one, either grow faster? And so this BOLD framework really stands for, B stands for be yourself, right? And so what I mean by that is I noticed that when I truly leaned into who I am, the unique strengths that I have, the things that sets me apart, that is when I saw real growth. Personally, in my career, that is when I saw people taking chances on me and wanting to invest in me. It just set me apart from the crowd. O means opening your mind to new definitions and opportunities, right? And so the example I would give with that is in the 2008 financial crisis, when, you know, unfortunately, people were losing jobs within the accounting department, that created an opportunity for me to want to learn more, to speak up to the CFO, to go into his office and say, I think I can do this work. Take your chance on me, and him really wanting to invest in me, right? So that is a way in which I open my mind in the midst of a crisis to create an opportunity for me. And so that's also what I want people to do. L means lift others, right? And I'm constantly thinking about, now that I have knowledge, how can I lift other people up? How can I bring other people so that they're, as they're figuring their lives out, they don't feel alone, right? They feel like there is somebody that has invested in them, because I'm a product of people investing in me, right? There was somebody who lifted me up, and so I have to continue doing that. D means don't wait, do it now. And a lot of us, what holds us back is, one, in our minds, and two, because we just won't start. So what is the idea or concept you have? What is a business you might want to try? What is a relationship you might want to foster? Don't wait. Take that step and do it now. Don't be afraid of what will happen, right? A lot of the fear that comes up is stuff we build in our minds. And okay, what really is the worst that will happen? Is either you're going to learn something about yourself or about the process that will help you, right, improve on everything that you're doing, or you maximize and jump into this great opportunity, right? So that's where the bold framework comes from. And like you said, I have essentially lived this out, right? So I'm talking the talk, but I've also walked it and I continue to walk it.
I believe it. I absolutely believe it. Now, this framework does need, or it did need, some resilience, a lot of it. Now, I cannot speak for every Missourian, but when we encounter a jerk to another human being, it's sometimes hard not to want to punch their lights out. And in the book, there's a part where I almost cried. And you know the part I'm talking about?
Yes.
I wrote it down. I'm going to quote, "You take too much time off for your daughter." This, like I said, this framework needs some resilience. And I was very saddened as I read that. I'm impressed with just the resilience and the grit and the tenacity that you've had over your career. Would you like to respond?
So, I mean, to the resilience, like that really affected me for a while. And I even think, I'm typically on the optimistic side, on the positive side. And when that comment was made, it just felt like I hadn't been, all the ways in which I'd been showing up at work. And this was my first child, right? And I think it was her birthday. Right. And I was like, I would love to just spend the day with her. And when this comment was made, I mean, I don't even think I'd taken off. I think I had asked for like the day after Christmas off. And then, of course, it was not the birthday. So I'm like, it's just 2 days. I'm like, and children are walking unpredictable days off situations, right? You never know when something can happen with your child. And so in that moment, I really didn't feel supported. After about, I think it was like 2 weeks, I think even one of my project managers had reached out to find out like, what is going on with our happy Bola and our positive Bola? And, I somehow just got through it and pushed back past that. But I say that to say that had nothing to do with me. Maybe it was more so the person who had brought it up and whatever it is that they're dealing with. And so I try a lot of times, if people respond that way now, not to take it too personally and just say that, maybe there needs to be some prayers around that situation. A lot of times people's response is not really about you. It's more about them.
And that segues into another comment. And you brushed upon this in the book. Do you have some advice? I mean, not just practical advice, but some firm advice for HR people. You do come, I hope this is not a negative comment in this era. You do come across to me as a super mom. We also have super dads who hopefully are taking a huge role in the household, where you have, maybe two people working, you got the soccer or the baseball and basketball and the traveling teams, the debate teams, but the super mom. What do our HR professionals need to be hearing about people to where work life, I don't like to use the term work-life balance, but what would have been a good response from an HR person at the time had been?
Yeah. So I think for me, mothers, fathers, a lot of times it's moms, right? Because we just end up either taking it, no matter how, no matter your role, your primary role is still mom, right? So we shouldn't be put in a situation where we have to pick between motherhood, motherhood, family, and work, right? Organizations in general need to be finding or putting policies in place that support support us not having to make a choice. And before I even go there, I would actually even like to say, like, we've seen it through the pandemic, right? Women had the largest amount people to leave out of the workforce, right? So we have a visible example of the way in which our companies are set up don't right now work for parents. And so an advice I would give to HR is really and truly to look at their policies and, one, offer flexibility for parents, not even just HR, even their team leads, right? Like, truly take a moment to understand what the setup or situation is at home and think about how you as an organization can help support these people, right? So because I had that experience for me now in my team, right, I currently have somebody who's out on maternity leave. Even before maternity leave, she had some health issues during her pregnancy. And immediately, I made sure that she was able to work from home fully, because the fact that she's not in the office has nothing to do with the work she's producing. It doesn't make her less of, you know, less sharp, or it doesn't make the quality of her work less. And so the fact, you know, you have to offer flexibility so that mothers feel that they can get back into the workforce. They don't feel like they're so behind. You know, when they stop or when they go on leave, they don't feel like they've lost all these years. In fact, that's a whole new skill set that you've learned. I truly feel that mothers are very efficient workers, right? Because we know we have limited time. So we don't have time to faff around, or, like, you know, when we're at work, we know we have our work to do. And so, like, organizations need to be truly supportive. Think about ways in which they can implement policies that are supportive to both parents.
We are so much on the same page. And that person that you allow them to be flexible with their time, you will be the best person they have ever worked for, ever. Very much on the same page. Hey, a couple more big ideas out of the book. You talk about being memorable.
Yes.
Being memorable. That's interesting. But how does a young accountant, a young financial leader, it's like, what does that mean? I know what that means, but some people may feel uncomfortable. So what's some other advice from the book about being memorable? Because I love the concept. I love the idea. And I don't think I've ever heard someone like you in your shoes talk that way.
Yeah. So I think, when I say be memorable, I mean, the chapter talks a lot. I believe that chapter is under the visibility chapter, right? And
yes,
at some point in time, you might not be able to be, like, outwardly visible, beyond your firm visible, but within your organization, how are you making yourself memorable? So that's where the idea comes from. And that really stemmed from, like, the actions that I took, especially from my very first job, right? There were things that I did there that helped me be memorable so that 10 years down the line, people could call me for a position that was probably, you know, way above where I would have even dreamed for myself. But in terms of being memorable, one, of course, you stay true to who you are, but, like, how are you showing up at your work? There are things that you have to, you know, are you asking questions? Are you coming up to your boss when you don't understand something so that you can spend some time? Are you even getting to know them? Are you even asking the question, how are you? Especially in accounting or finance teams where we are spending a lot of time with numbers, you almost feel like, oh, you can't have that human side to your, you know, you can't bring that human side to your work. And I think that that's how you make yourself memorable. How are you building and developing relationships? It doesn't mean that you're all of a sudden best friends, right? But how are you developing relationships for people to remember you so that they can speak about you in rooms that you don't have access to, right? So you don't have to be the loudest. You don't have to be the most extroverted person. But in your own way, how are you? There are skills that you have to, like, practice, build, right? So that people can remember who you are, right? Your work, the era of saying your work just speaks for you. Yes, it does get you some way, but to get you further, you need to be engaging. There needs to be communication. So I say start small. If you're not comfortable, walking up like me to the CFO, start with your teammates. Start with your team report, right? Your team lead. Maybe ask for one-on-one time, 5 minutes. how am I performing on my work? Am I, do you feel like I'm meeting up to the team's, you feel like I'm meeting up to my responsibilities? Is there anything I can be doing better? And that conversation might be, oh no, you're doing great. 5 minutes, right? Or even less than 5 minutes. And they say, oh, you don't need to do anything. Or they say, oh yes, I think you can take on X, X, and X. But if you don't actually like book that 5 minute conversation, then you wouldn't start feeling comfortable having these. But when you start practicing that way, it helps you when you now have to go to a CFO's office to like present something. You have to start small.
CFO Bookshelf is about lifelong learning for financial leaders. So when you talk about self-development in the book, that's, I mean, I love what you bring out. I would suggest though, on a 10 scale, you're probably at a 10 level when it comes to self-development. But as we talk to some of the people who may be at the 4, 5, 6 level, it's you're almost saying the same thing. But again, self-development, that cannot be understated, can it?
It really can't. I don't think so. I mean, you have to. For me, I think I was fortunate early on in my career to really key into that. And again, not be afraid to like, again, speak up for the areas in which maybe I'm not really strong at, but I know I want to improve. As a leader, leaders should be happy when, you know, people on their team come up and say they want to learn something, they want to be exposed to something, right? Because then that shows room for growth. If you're not growing, then you're just stagnant and it just becomes, again, a 9-to-5 that you're doing, right? You're just clocking in, clocking out. But I knew I didn't just want to do that. So when you're at 4, 5, 6 level, right, early on in your career, think, and you want an opportunity to move up or to grow or to expand in your role or to just be exposed to something new, make sure you start having these conversations. Make sure you, like I said, the tip I gave, it doesn't have to be a 30-minute long conversation. It could be 5 minutes, and that will make a huge difference in your development. But you want to start small. You want to be consistent, right? Because again, you're forming a new habit. What is the issue that we all have? It's because we don't want, forming new habits might make us feel uncomfortable, but you need to push past that. And then by the time you do it multiple times, you start getting more comfortable with the situation.
I don't think I've ever have met someone at your age. So by the way, when I say that, I'm thinking someone this young. I hope I did not insult you by saying
no.
So young. I don't think I've ever met someone at your age that has their own foundation. I just think that is remarkable. Cool. I know you are a person of humility, but I want to bring this up because there is a big difference between just token giving and having a generous heart. So I just want to say kudos to your work, you know, having a foundation, but I think there's a story here or some good advice. When it comes to gratitude, what do you suggest to people who are looking for a way to give to others? Like, because you found a very unique way. Your circumstances put you in a place to where you found a need. You jumped on it. Some people appreciated it, and I'm sure we may hear about this. But what's some advice that you can give when it comes to giving to others, whether it's an individual or even a firm like yours?
Yeah. So, I mean, I say it in the book. Like for me, generosity is so huge. Probably one of the most important thing to me. Because there's nothing like us all, you know, taking our own collective responsibility, to lifting others up, to pouring back into people, especially if you've been privileged enough to somehow, some way make it be relative, you know, but you're in a position where you can afford to either give back with time, money. I think, again, people with nonprofits, they always think you have to do this grand thing. And my journey into this space was from something really small. And I could share a little bit about that.
Please, I think it's beautiful.
Yes. So my journey into this space actually came from pain, you know. So my husband and I were trying for our first baby. Unfortunately, you know, when I finally got pregnant, I had a miscarriage. And the outlet in which I found was to crochet. And so I started crocheting, you know, hats for my nephews and nieces. People, again, like you said, found interest in that. And I was almost even forced to like start charging. Someone sent money into my account. She was like, I know you say you're not doing this as a business, but I'm going to support you. But when I started crocheting, I was like, I need to find a way to give back, you know. And one of my very good friends from high school happens to be a doctor at a NICU. I was like, I'm going to like crochet hats for babies in this NICU. And it gave me a sense of purpose, right? Like I was doing something not for myself, not because I wanted a child, you know, like it was just, let me make this donation. And I literally crocheted. I will never forget. It was May 1st. I had this, I think I actually still have the blog post. I went and I made this donation. And it was such an enriching experience for me, being at the NICU, donating it. And the next day I found out I'm pregnant. And so that's where, you know, like, now it's called She Builds Lives. Then it was called Bola Craft Cares. That's where the whole, charity or charitable works was birthed. And so then I started one project. I did another one, maybe like a couple months after. And then I thought, oh, how maybe I could crochet scarves, sell them to people, and then use it to raise, to buy resources for a low-income school in Nigeria. And at that point, I said, okay, maybe it would be like $500. Well, I ended up raising, I don't know, like $1,500, which was able to help maybe like 100 kids. And then the next year, I dreamt bigger. And then, you know, it just kept going on and on. And then in 2019, this very first school that I had supported reached out to me about rebuilding their school building. And I said, yes. I said, yes, even though I had no idea. But here we are in 2019 and we've been able, you know, through my nonprofit, been able to build a brand new building in this floating community called Makoko that houses, we have 207 kids. It's an elementary school. So kindergarten through, or we call it in Nigeria, it's nursery through, sixth grade. And now this community has a place, a nice building, a computer lab, you know, just a library. We have, a building in which these children feel that they can come in. It's a safe space for them to learn and that there's somebody who really cares. Right. So for me, that's the beauty about starting with crocheting hats to where it has now grown to. So a lot of people either think that, oh, they need to build, like their first project needs to be a school. No, there's the power of small and the power of one, right? So I say find ways to give back if it's with your time. It might not be as, you know, setting up a full nonprofit, but like in your organization, if there's something you're passionate about, maybe you can, or in your firm, maybe you start a small group. Right. If you're passionate about mothers, maybe you start a small group. You know, maybe you can go to HR and say, can we start a conversation around wellness for mothers? Right. So that's an idea that I've thrown out there. Or if you're passionate about children, maybe you're volunteering to tutor 1 hour a week, 1 hour a month. Right. It doesn't have to be this grand thing, but it's a seed you're sowing that's going to have full ripple effects. Once that child leaves your presence, or once that person leaves your presence, you never know what somebody's taking away from giving back.
I can just hear every CEO that's listening to this. We want a Bola type person working for us. I'm blown away. Real quickly, who do you want to read this book? Now, I know you could say anyone who can read or any, but sir, who would you like to be the ideal reader for this book?
Yeah. So I have two categories of people that I want to pick up this book and read. The first is anybody who is truly ready to be intentional about changing their path, right? They really want to grow. So you could be an employee, you could be a leader, but you're ready to take intentional steps. Not that you're just reading it and you're saying, oh, I'm inspired by it, and you don't do anything with it, right? You really want to take the framework and apply it to your life, almost like a build boldly, this is how I was, and then post, these are the steps that I'm taking to make sure that I see the changes that I want. The next set of people, group that I want reading this book are actually leaders, right? So when you think about the people who are running firms, the people who are making the decisions that affect their people, their employees, right? I want leaders to pick this book up and really be challenged about how they are leading their people. How are you leading your firms? Are you leading them boldly? Are you just doing things status quo just because it's always been done that way? Or are there changes that you can really make to your organization so that you are really nurturing the employees or the talents that you have, right? So how are you implementing, how are you taking the things that I've shared and implementing it into your organization so that people want can stay and they feel that you are investing in them? And so those are the two groups of people that I want reading this book.
You've done a lot in your young career, and I'm even going to say the best is yet to come.
However,
I do see one missing item on your resume. Now, you may say it's not important, but let's just have some fun, have an open mind. TED Talk or a TEDx presentation. Is that something, will we ever see you do a TED Talk or a TEDx presentation?
Mark, listen, you've put it out into the world. You've spoken it into existence.
I'm sorry.
So now it has to happen. Now it has to happen. Yes, I mean, I would, what an honor it would be, you know, to either be on a stage. We actually have a TEDx speaker in my family. My sister-in-law recently had a great one sharing from her platform, which is Not Your Mama's Autism. And so it was amazing to see her be up there. But for me, yes, I think it would be great to do a TEDx talk. And if I was to think about a title, you know, the ripple effects of one, right? And then that is almost like sharing, you know, like my background, which is I was an only child, right? To now really and truly talking about like, what is the impact that we all can have individually, right? Inspiring people to really think about how they can show up and how just because you're one person doesn't mean the ripple effect or your impact, you know, can't spread wide, can't really and truly cause change. It can. And so maybe that's an idea that I would talk about.
I think I got lucky in my career, or maybe I was in the right place at the right time. I started my accounting career at KPMG, Pete Marwick. And I think most of the people I work for, and I call public accounting boot camp, because I was not there for a career, but most of the managers I work for, most of the senior managers I work for, and one of the partners, we had one partner out of many who was a woman, but most of the managers and senior partners or senior managers I work for were women. And I thought nothing of it. So then I start working in private industry. Most of the people I work for were women. So I've had this career where gender has been just a non-issue. But I also realize that maybe I've led a very sheltered professional career. So I do know, based on reading, read a lot, I know it's not easy. So even though I've had this sheltered professional bubble, and again, I admire and appreciate the people I work for, final advice for women.
Yeah, so
in the workplace.
Yeah. Listen, I say that women work really hard. What I mean by that is we are typically a lot of times, especially if you're an exec or a leader, you are at top of your game. Trust me, I don't think our male counterparts are doing as much as we are. And so I
agree. Can I just interject?
Yes.
I agree.
Yes. Right. Because and what I mean by that is if we were, if we were to do a presentation, the way we would prepare for that, making sure all our I's and T's are dotted, you know, crossed, is incredible. So you have it. And what I mean by that is the knowledge, the expertise, everything is there. So I would say don't doubt what you are bringing to the table. You belong at that table. If you're in there, that means your voice needs to be heard. So don't be afraid to speak up, to use your voice. Don't be afraid to show that you're not perfect too, right? And it's not a flaw against you. It's just an opportunity. Trust me, the good things that you're bringing even cover up that one flaw. But don't be afraid to not look perfect. But the main thing I would say is don't doubt what you're bringing. We all have it, and there is a lot of power in our voice.
We ask every person we have on the show about their favorite books. Shocker, right? So do I get to ask you what some of your favorite books are, have been, maybe books that you've gifted, books that you recommend? What's on your short list?
Yeah, so let me start with the last book I read, which was The Big Leap, and I wrote his name down, Gay Hendricks. I absolutely love that book. You know, it talks about the different zones in which we operate in. And I think if a lot of people read that book, it would be a liberating experience for them after. So that's an instant favorite for me. Two, of course,
book fits.
Huh?
It's going to say it fits. It fits in your bold framework.
It fits in the bold framework. Another really good book that I like is Untamed by Glenn Doyle. That's a fantastic book for women. Again, a liberating book. It releases you off of societal pressures, what you think you should be doing, and truly just allows you be. Right. So those two books I will share as some that I've really and truly enjoyed. And of course, my book, Build Boldly. Make sure that's an instant favorite also.
Bola, this has just been an honor. It's been a treat. I cannot thank you enough for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation.
You are listening to CFO Bookshelf, lifelong learning for financial leaders. And now back to our host, Mark Gandy.
When you hear the bumper that just played, that means I have now heard this interview or any interview for either the second or third time. That's not counting the actual interview. So I'm still amazed at just listening to what Bolanlee Williams-Ali has to say. I mean, what she's done in this short lifetime, she's done more now than what some people will do in two or three lifetimes. So again, just what an incredible human being. And again, her book is Build Boldly. In the book, she has six leadership questions. And I want to go through those very quickly before we wrap up. Number one, Bola asks, am I creating an experience for employees that's better than what I came up through? Question number two, with respect to leadership, am I doing things because they have always been done that way, or am I pushing into changes that will make things better? Leadership question number three, am I listening to my people and making them feel seen, heard, and valued? Number four, am I creating a culture that fosters boldness? Number five, what intentional choices will I make today? And then the last question, am I nurturing the people around me? Six great leadership questions. Again, the book by Bola Williams-Ali, Build Boldly. Highly recommend it. Get it, read it, buy copies, share it with others. We need to call this a wrap. This is CFO Bookshelf. Until next time.